You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I write about the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago and Bears Wire. And I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. Today is Mock Draft Monday, so it's another podcast chock full of draft talk right here for you. We're going to talk about the running back performances at the NFL Scouting Combine, look at the winners and losers to kind of figure out what we learned about this draft class. And since it is Mock Draft Monday, we will wrap up with a full 7-round mock draft that I'll do live right here with you through a mock draft machine. But we start with the draft event of the weekend, and really a lot of last week was the NFL Scouting Combine, which actually is still going on today here, Monday, March 4th. And we're going to be getting more into what the defensive backs do today on tomorrow's podcast. So you'll have more NFL draft and combine talk to look forward to then. But I think it's important if we go back to Friday's day at the combine. We didn't have a chance all weekend to talk combine, but that was when the running backs took the field for their drills, and that's been a real position of buzz for this Bears team. We talked a little bit last week about how it's not so much a position of need, a little bit more of a position of luxury, but it's looking more and more likely that the Chicago Bears will have the opportunity to draft a pretty talented running back prospect with one of their five current draft picks. And this class has some real depth. The strength isn't necessarily at the top like it's been in recent years. This is a deeper running back draft class. And we saw some of these guys that were a little bit further down the list in terms of where most draft analysts have them ranked. We saw some of these day three type running backs more in the Bears range start to make some names for themselves and have some good performances, and a couple of other running backs struggling a bit more. I think the guy who stood out or maybe started to take some of the biggest headlines is the guy who finished with the fastest time in the 40-yard dash. That is Oklahoma State running back Justice Hill. He ran a 4.4. Not a lot of super burners at the running back position here, but you know, you never get too many guys that run a sub 4.4 at that point anyway. But with Justice Hill, I mean, he is a smaller running back down at 5'9" and 5/8", just under 200 pounds. But he's got not only the 40-yard dash speed, but the explosiveness numbers, the vertical jump at 40 inches, the broad jump at 130 inches, really taking the combine by storm. And on top of that, added 21 reps on the bench press. It's just a pure showing of explosiveness. And again, one of the few running backs who weighed in under 200 pounds, a little bit small for that size, but when you can make up for it with those types of speed timings plus 21 reps on the bench press, he showed pretty much everything you want out of a running back at a combine measurement level, except for height and weight. And I'm not ready to call him the next Tariq Cohen or anything, but when you think about a guy who shows you everything except for height and weight, you can see from a, I guess, from a flavor standpoint, from sort of a perspective standpoint, maybe Justice Hill has a little bit of that to him. They're not really the same player on the tape, but just in terms of guys who, you know, elite athletes, but strong, explosive, and everything but height and weight, seems like Justice Hill is right in that mold. And then another guy who had a pretty strong performance all around, didn't necessarily blow the roof off the place, but Miles Sanders from Penn State, just kind of all around solid. It wasn't like in the top two at any of the top drills or anything like that, but just a guy who showed a lot of athletic ability and can do a little bit of everything. He had kind of a tough shadow to come out from under, following up Saquon Barkley as the next Penn State running back at the NFL Combine, and he was never going to put up the same numbers as, you know, the number two overall pick elite, you know, quote-unquote generational athlete running back that Saquon Barkley was. But Sanders was a guy, puts up a 4.49 the 40-yard dash, pretty decent 124-inch broad jump, three cone of 6.89 seconds. All these are in the top 25% among running backs. And, you know, 5'10", 211 pounds. He's got some oomph to him a little bit and enough explosiveness there. Again, just a guy you can rely on to do a little bit of everything. You know, some fluidity, some explosiveness, some long speed, some power, and just kind of proving himself as not Saquon Barkley, but not someone you should just totally ignore either. I think he could be lifting himself up a little bit higher out of that third round. I mean, in that second to third round range, maybe a little bit higher than he was before, and just kind of continuing to check some boxes for him to at least keep his stock up and not have him get too lost underneath that shadow of Saquon Barkley. Then one other guy who came a little bit out of nowhere for me, not a guy I knew a lot of heading into the combine, but was able to watch a little bit of tape after seeing him run, Temple running back Ryquell Armstead. Now he ended up finishing with the second fastest 40-yard dash time at 4.45, and was also in the top five, I believe, in the three cone, if I remember correctly, at 7.07 seconds. So he's got some wiggle to him, right? But he is more of a aggressive downhill type runner. He's not afraid to fight through contact and kind of keep pushing forward. I think he weighed in around 5'11", 220 pounds. He's got some real beef to him, but to be able to have some of that change of direction ability and that long speed potentially shows you that there's a little bit something more there. His more explosive numbers as far as his jumps were, I would say, poor. I mean, he didn't have a 30-inch vertical and 114-inch broad are not showing you a guy that's necessarily that bursty, but he is a guy who can maintain some speed once he gets going and can be a little bit of that bowling ball type running back. Seemed like more of a late round, borderline draftable type guy, but at least late day three, but could be bumping himself up a little bit as he kind of proves that, hey, not only did he have the production at Temple as a runner, not really used much as a receiver, but a 1,000-yard rusher his last year and really emerging as a legitimate kind of workhorse for that Temple offense. Now moving himself up perhaps into some of those earlier day three conversations, at the very least ensuring he will for sure be drafted and likely not an undrafted free agent. Now, of course, not everyone helped their draft stock with their NFL combine performances. So up next, we'll look at a player or two who really didn't look great out there and could ultimately end up falling a little bit in the draft as teams question their ability to prepare for the combine and maybe some of the questions of their true speed and explosiveness. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. Thank you for tuning in to this Mock Draft Monday episode of Locked On Bears. We'll have your Monday Mock Draft coming up in just a little bit, but as we continue our look at the running back performances in the combine, seems like every year there's just a couple players at every position that come in and really just disappoint. You know, a lot of times the combine is just about checking some boxes and confirming kind of what you see on tape, and there's a couple guys who come in and just really do the opposite and make you go, oh man, you know, was I missing something? Is there an injury here? Or what could possibly be going on? And the guy who really stole the show here, I think, for the poster boy of poor combine running backs this year is Elijah Holyfield, the Georgia running back. And obviously, running the slowest 40-yard dash time of any running back in this combine is going to bring some negative headlines your way at 4.78 seconds. But then when you pair that with a really low vertical jump, under 30 inches, and a broad jump of 118, and you know, a little bit on the smaller hand and arm size as well, still 5'10", 217, and a nice 26 bench reps kind of showed off some of those pipes that you've seen him have, and you know, just the, sort of that thick build that you see Elijah Holyfield have. But from an athletic standpoint, it starts to bring in some questions about, okay, just how fast and explosive is he? And Holyfield opted not to run some of the agility drills, like the short shuttle and the three cone, which he potentially would have seemingly done better, and that seems to be a little bit more of his style of play. But it does kind of make you go back and say, okay, wait a minute, is Holyfield actually this bad athlete? And you can kind of look back at the tape, and he isn't a guy that necessarily wins with athletic ability. I mean, he is a vision runner. He's got great footwork, and he seems to be able to kind of squeeze the most out of every play that's there. He wasn't really that home run threat on tape. He's not a guy that's going to outrun people down the side of the field. So to that extent, maybe it shouldn't be surprising that his 40-yard dash was slow. Maybe it should be concerning that it was the slowest, but you still see a lot of great traits on tape. You see consistently productive and, you know, repeatable traits on tape that suggest he can translate well to the NFL level in spite of what his combine numbers say. And similarly for Florida Atlantic running back Devin Singletary. Comes in at 5'7 and a half, a little bit smaller even than I think some people were expecting. Short arms at less than 29 inches, small hands at 8.5 inches. Doesn't really do well in the three-cone drill at 7.32 seconds. His 40-yard dash is a little slow at 4.66. Just not quite that, again, elite athlete that you were looking for, that you could kind of see some glimpses of on tape. And not that he was just the total burner, but you wanted to see this guy look a little bit more smooth out there and a little bit less stiff running on the field. And I guess what it brings us back to is, what is the true value of the NFL Combine? What is the NFL Combine telling us, and how much does it impact the evaluation of a prospect in the draft? Because I think when you're watching the Combine, especially if you're down there in Indianapolis, it can be easy to get really caught up in all of the hype, the excitement, and the meaning of really being there and seeing how much is on the line for these players. But how much is actually on the line for these players? How much do you learn when a guy runs 40 yards in a straight line in underwear, essentially? And I hate to disparage it too much, because there's a lot of value you can take away. You know, we had talked to John Ledyard last week on last week's, I believe, Mock Draft Monday episode about what you'd look for in the running back and from the combine. And a lot of it is more visual in the field agility drills, not necessarily the time drills, but just kind of seeing him run around a little bit. You can see some flexibility there. And there's some value to seeing the 40-yard dash, seeing the three cone for some change of direction, the jumps for some explosiveness. And there is very real measurables that can come out of that. But these results, both good and bad, whether it's Holyfield struggling or a guy like Justice Hill from Oklahoma State really, you know, exploding a bit more than we thought, it shouldn't drastically change how we view these players. It's definitely valuable to give us an opportunity to go back in the tape with a more critical look and say, okay, why did this player run fast? Why did this player run slow? Or more importantly, why did they run faster than I thought they did? Why did they run slower than I thought they would? And that can help you better evaluate the prospect and make sure you're identifying the correct traits and identifying how well those traits will translate to the NFL. But a guy shouldn't necessarily move way up or down your draft board just based on what he does at the combine if you've already seen all the tape. You know, that tape is got to be the number one aspect of the evaluation process, because how fast a player plays is a lot different than how fast a player tests. And play speed is so much more important when you're on the field and you have to process things and sort of think, react, and go. That, you know, the guys who can play faster than they test, those are some real football players there. And the guys who test faster than they play ultimately end up being more athletes than football players. So, of course, the NFL draft is a very complicated evaluation process, and the NFL Combine is just a small part of that evaluation process, an important part, and it provides some key data and context for some measurements that we wouldn't otherwise have. But I caution with putting too much stock in it or evaluating it too deeply or just letting it dictate too much of your NFL draft opinions. It's fun to go through. It's fun to keep an eye on. It's worthwhile to watch and to track, but it's important to keep it all in perspective. I think you can kind of say the same thing about mock drafts at this time of the year. It's fun. It's a good exercise to do, but it only has so much weight to it. It can at least kind of give us a feel for some of the depth of the draft class and some potential movers and shakers and where positions could kind of stand as far as who's going to be there in what round and where the Bears might be able to take impact players at certain positions. So that's why up next on the podcast, we will go through a live mock draft. I'll do it right here with you through the mock draft machine on thedraftnetwork.com and see what we can get with the Bears' five picks. That's next on Locked On Bears. So in the spirit of Mock Draft Monday, let's get into a seven-round Chicago Bears mock draft. Now, the way we're going to do this is through thedraftnetwork.com. They've built a mock draft machine. So what you do is you select the teams you want to draft for. You pick which big board you want to use. I will use the Draft Network's player rankings. You set the number of rounds. You set the pick speed. You set whether you want to do it manually or automatically. And then you get going, and it rolls through the draft picks for you until you get up to where you are on the clock for the teams you selected. Now, unfortunately, when you do a seven-round mock draft for the Chicago Bears, you have to sit through the first 86 picks of the mock draft before you get to make your first selection. So you watch all the really talented players go off the board and see what they leave you with by the time you get to 87. So that's kind of why I'm talking through it right now and stalling as I watch the mock draft machine get us closer and closer to 87. Not even editing this down or cutting it to just pick up right when the Bears are on the clock. You are just listening and waiting along with me as we go 84, 85, 86, 87. The Chicago Bears are on the clock. And boy, is there some depth at some positions of need, or at least some positions of interest here for the Chicago Bears. Now, obviously, there's a decent chance this is not how the draft is going to play out, but Iowa State running back David Montgomery is sitting here as the top player available still on the board. Devin Singletary from FAU as well. And a couple of safeties, Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State and Jaquan Johnson from Miami as well. Really some depth there, some depth at running back, a few wide receivers, a couple defensive linemen, a couple tight ends as well. But boy, it's tough when you're sitting there with a running back like David Montgomery from Iowa State, a guy with such balance, a guy who can run over some people, who's got that workhorse strength and sort of durability and patience with him. Not a guy who's necessarily great in the passing game. It hasn't been asked to catch a lot of balls and hasn't necessarily caught a lot of balls. Not a guy with some great deep speed, but he's got some slipperiness to him. He has a little bit of that explosiveness, and he's a guy who can do a little bit of everything from a scheme standpoint and just be a pretty good pass protector, so still be in there on passing downs as well. And he could very well be a second-round pick type player that would be maybe even the best player available on the board at this time. But given where the Bears stand now, and maybe we enter this third round with the idea that Adrian Amos isn't re-signed the way it stands now, it's tough when I see a guy like Jonathan Abram sitting there from Mississippi State. You want to talk about a physical box safety, a guy who can lay the wood, 6'0", 210, and can kind of step in and be that Adrian Amos replacement. He's a player that some people project to even be like a sub-package linebacker that you could throw in there as in a three-safety type look and have him play linebacker and keep two other safeties on the field. He's the type of guy I'd love to have in Chicago to compete with Deion Bush to push to be that starting safety in year one. And I just know how much running back depth there is in this draft class. As much as I would like David Montgomery at this pick, he's still not quite the ideal Matt Nagy running back, if I'm going to be really picky about the traits I want in the position. Meanwhile, safety is a really big need. Abram is another guy who's in that potential second-round pick-type range who happens to fall to the Bears here at 87. I don't want to feel like I'm drafting need per se, because I do think Abram is right up there in terms of where you're taking best player available, and if it's close, I lean need, and so that's why I'm going to go with the Mississippi State safety, Jonathan Abram, with that 87th overall pick. Now, as we see the picks continue to keep falling off the board, I'm seeing a lot of running back depth still lingering here, and I'm feeling a little bit better about not taking a running back there. Not that it would be a reach, but just addressing bigger needs at other positions while still taking essentially a best player available, because I get to pick 126 here, the Bears' next pick, their fourth round pick, and I see my top players on the board: Elijah Holyfield from Georgia, Divine Ozigbo from Nebraska, Rodney Anderson from Oklahoma, James Williams from Washington State, Justice Hill from Oklahoma State, Benny Snell, Kentucky, Darwin Thompson, Utah State, and then the wide receiver Stanley Morgan from Nebraska. A lot of running back depth here available with this pick. A lot of different guys that could help this team in perhaps more the way of a Matt Nagy type running back that you'd like to see. And now there's a player available here with this pick that I've fallen in love with, and I'm going to have to lean that way, I think, at this point. And one of the names I went through there, I mean, a guy like Azeebo is intriguing to me. Holyfield, I still like, despite some of his combine struggles that we talked about earlier on this podcast. But I really fell in love with James Williams from Washington State. 5'11", 195. He's an explosive runner, a guy who can make you miss in the open field. One of the best at forcing missed tackles and can be that home run threat and extremely productive in the passing game. I want to say he had over 70 catches last season. Great hands, great ball skills, and can kind of be that all-around type weapon that Matt Nagy needs for his offense. So I'm not sure if James Williams is going to go quite that early. It's hard to get a feel for, once you get outside of really the third round, where teams are going to view some of these prospects. But I would consider him with that fourth round pick. And I like him as a better fit than some of those other running backs that I mentioned in terms of how they're going to fit in Matt Nagy's offense. So I'm going to roll with James Williams with that fourth round pick. And that brings us along to round five, as the picks go a little bit faster now that the Bears are picking every round. And still running back depth: Rodney Anderson, Justice Hill, Benny Snell, Darwin Thompson, Miles Gaskin, Karen Higdon. And a lot of the other depth still on the board is at wide receiver: Terry McLaurin from Ohio State, Travis Fulgham from Old Dominion, Anthony Johnson, Buffalo, David Stills, West Virginia, Paris Campbell, Ohio State. And now Campbell's a guy that I think a lot of people believe are going to go a lot higher in this draft. He could be a potential day two type pick, a truly elite athlete at the wide receiver position at 6 foot, 208 pounds, a great, great route runner in there as well. There's a lot of different ways he can win for you, and I think you're not going to see teams let him continue to fall that far down in this draft. So if we're just rolling with the mock draft, I can't pass up Paris Campbell here in the fifth round at the 162nd overall pick. Adding a wide receiver, even though the Bears don't need depth there, it's about best player available, adding more playmakers to your team. And when you talk about Taylor Gabriel being a free agent potentially just in a couple years here, finding that long-term replacement for him could be a priority or could just be an option in this draft. If you get to a pick like that where the wide receiver depth that's still available is both impressive and advantageous for you to take advantage of. We wrap up here in the seventh round, where the Chicago Bears have two draft picks. And again, I'm left with a lot of wide receiver and running back depth. And now we start to kind of get to, okay, take a chance on a guy, take a flyer on a player that you think could potentially be, you know, some kind of home run perhaps, or just a guy that, you know, you just want to take a chance on, that low risk, high reward type players here. And it's not going to be a draft pick that you're relying on to necessarily pan out, but just a guy that you feel like could be maybe a shot in the dark, something pretty good. And when I get to this type of a pick, I like to pick guys that I'm pretty familiar with, guys that I have a soft spot for, that I've kind of fallen in love with in some of these drafts. And so with the 222nd overall pick, I'm going to go with Wisconsin linebacker TJ Edwards. Just a smart, physical player. He dealt with some injuries during his career at Wisconsin, but really plays at a high level, can be athletic enough to be a weapon in terms of pass coverage, great in run defense, and can blitz the quarterback pretty well there. At the minimum, you're getting a good special teams linebacker with some long-term starters upside. And that brings us to the last pick of the Bears mock draft, pick 238 in the seventh round. And with this pick, I got to go with a kicker. I don't usually believe in drafting kickers. You can find the best, you can find quality kickers as undrafted free agents. But with the way this mock draft machine works, the teams don't draft kickers, and they probably shouldn't, and I probably shouldn't. But when the best kicker in the draft, Cole Tracy from LSU, is there with the 238th pick, you got to get that young leg in there who can kick in and give you some accuracy. He might not have quite the dominant leg strength, but he's got more than enough leg strength to kick at Soldier Field, cut through some of that wind, and maintain that accuracy from college into the NFL. So to recap, in the third round, 87th overall pick, Jonathan Abram, safety from Mississippi State. Fourth round, running back James Williams from Washington State. Fifth round, wide receiver Paris Campbell, Ohio State. Likely not going to be there at that pick once we get to actual draft day, but I will take it in this simulation. First seventh round pick, linebacker TJ Edwards from Wisconsin. Second seventh round pick, kicker Cole Tracy from LSU. A little bit disappointed I didn't come away with a cornerback. I think that's a particularly big need. We talked about whether that's the biggest need last week on the podcast. I think it is the biggest need. I think it takes precedent over safety, over running back, over offensive line, etc. Would have liked to grab one there, but hopefully in this type of situation, I re-signed to Bryce Callahan, where I added some cornerback depth in free agency, because eventually that position needs to be addressed. But you can't just draft for need. You got to take best player available to build your roster. And I feel like, for the most part, that's pretty much what I did in this mock draft. Hope you enjoyed our little exercise here, even if it's somewhat of an exercise in futility. It is interesting to see the way that this running back depth and wide receiver depth seems to kind of build up as the draft goes on. I anticipate that to be the case at the end of April. And so I would expect the Bears to maybe anticipate that and not use their first pick or two at those positions, with the potential to still find quality players there later on in the draft. They're still going to go best player available, and if that's a running back, that's a running back, but I would expect that BPA strategy will ultimately lead them elsewhere earlier on. I hope Locked On Bears is your BPA, best podcast available. I try and do everything I can to make it the best podcast available. I always am open to hearing feedback, whether that's just asking a question for the show or, you know, sending us your thoughts on Twitter at Locked On Bears, Locked On Bears Facebook group, or email us, lockedonbears@gmail.com, or there's the Locked On Bears voicemail and text line. Doesn't have to be just for questions for the podcast. The phone number is 312-620-8590. The more interactive we can make this, the better it is for you, the better it is for me, and I think the easier it is to bear down.